And by the way, happy White History Month. July is White History Month. July just feels white. Happy White History Month. And my biblical question, which is worse, physical or verbal abuse? Which is worse, physical or verbal abuse? For a while now, I've been saying that America is changing, and I'm very concerned about it, in that they keep saying that white people in America will become the minority and people of color will become the majority. And I'm very concerned about that because I believe that if the people of color take over America, we're going to have the same situation in America that the whites are dealing with in South Africa. In South Africa, the government is mostly black, if not all black, but definitely mostly black. And they are giving the white folks hell over there, taking their land without compensation. They are murdering, raping, robbing, and killing and stealing and just really carrying on. And no, there's no real outcry about it from the rest of the world. And I truly believe if the people of color take over America, the same thing going to happen to white people in America. Your land will be taken. Your jobs will be taken. You'll be raped, robbed, murdered. It will be totally messed up because whites are hated around the world and really for no reason, but they're hated. I have with me Simon Roche, and he is a spokesperson for the Streetlanders. The Southlanders, as they are known in English, is a group of fighters, is a group fighting for survivor of white people in South Africa. The group believes that a race war or general civil war is coming in South Africa. And again, I'm concerned about America as well as South Africa and the rest of the world. It's happening here slowly but surely. Simon, thank you for coming on with me. Happy White History Month.
Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson.
I really appreciate you being here. First of all, tell the folks about Streetlanders, exactly who they are, who you are and what you're doing.
Streetlanders is a civil defense organization constituted under the protocols additional to the Geneva Conventions, which govern the circumstances of conflict, any civil war, any international war, anywhere in the world. And they make specific provision for identifiable ethnic groups to prepare for and to act as a civil defense entity in the event of a civil war. We believe there's going to be a civil war. We are preparing for that civil war in legal and lawful ways to safeguard the welfare of our civilians.
Just to be clear, is it Streetlanders or Streetlanders?
Streetlanders.
Streetlanders.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's a very Dutch sound, so it's difficult to get it right.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure because it's important. Why is Streetlanders needed? What was happening that would cause a need for Streetlanders? What brought this on?
There has been a gradual decline in of our state since 1994, since the African National Congress and the South African Communist Party in an alliance won the first democratic elections in South Africa. Initially, people put it down to inexperience. You know, the guys coming from outside, they don't have governance experience. They weren't given opportunities during apartheid. But over time, it became clear that there was a sort of a trend and that the trend wasn't getting any better. And so our leader, our founder, Mr. Gustav Müller, decided in the early 2000s that the best course of action would be to prepare for the worst. And since then, he's been proven very much right in the sense that We're now in a situation in 2019, 25 years since the first fully democratic elections, where we have a massive national electricity crisis with blackouts of 14, 16, 18 hours a day, some months on, some months off. We have an incipient water crisis. Crime has gotten so bad that the army has just been sent into the townships around Cape Town as of 3 days ago. The farm murder rate is much higher than the fatality rates in many war zones in the world. And in fact, our national murder rate of 35.9, let's call it 36, per 100,000 people, compared to the USA, 4.88 per 100,000 people. So we're about seven, our murder rate is about 740% higher than the murder rate in the USA. That murder rate of ours of 36 is about the same as three of the world's current war zones, including Yemen and Afghanistan.
And so who are committing crimes against who?
There is a very much a have and have not syndrome in South Africa. So it's wealthy people, which tend to be overwhelmingly white, and poorer people, overwhelmingly black. In the case of the farm murders, there it's just a black-white thing. You can't really say that it's about wealth or poverty because the crimes involve a lot of torture and rape, people being burned alive, and so on. So the crimes are not necessarily about wealth and poverty. So it's quite a nuanced subject. It's a subtle topic.
So the blacks are robbing, raping, setting the whites on fire, the farmlanders, white landers,
yes.
White people on fire, robbing, raping, and murdering.
Yes, the farm attacks and the farm murders are particularly gruesome in South Africa. They often involve, well, there are many such examples, but people perhaps having their vocal cords cut, just their vocal cords, or being drilled through with a Black and Decker drilling machine through the wrists and the elbows and the ankles, and until eventually they die of pain. There are instances of men having their eyelids cut out so that they can't, close their eyelids while their wives are being raped. We've had two incidents recently in which one farmer was thrown into his pickup truck and bundled up with baling wire, such as you would bundle hay with or bale hay with, and then the pickup truck was set alight. In another instance, a farmer was caught at his farm gate while taking his daughter to school, and they raped the, I believe she was 14 or 15 years old. This was about 6 weeks ago. They raped her and forced him to watch. In another incident, about 3 days or 4 days apart from that, the farmer's wife was raped, and her daughter was then brought to be raped by the four men who invaded. And she begged them, rape me a second time, each of you, the four of you, but please don't. Eventually, she prevailed. They said, all right, we won't rape you. We won't rape your daughter, I beg your pardon, provided that when we rape you, the mother, the daughter watches. And if she closes her eyes or turns her head away, then we're going to rape her. So tell her nicely, she must watch everything. So there's this particular viciousness that is prevalent in the farm attacks.
And so these are black people doing this to white farmers, right?
Yes, yes.
And then in the city there in South Africa, it's mostly black-on-black crime?
That is correct, yes. The dominant crime is amongst black people in the townships, in the city, in the inner city of Johannesburg or Pretoria or Durban. Yes, that's correct.
So in the cities, is it black on white crime, black on black crime and black on white crime?
That's correct. I'll give you an example which might help you. In my immediate family, We're talking now about people living in the cities. My father was hijacked, and they put him on his knees and attempted to execute him twice, but the gun misfired twice. I've been shot at a few times, and I've had my skull crushed just over here. It's still quite painful about 25 years later. One of my sons at the age of 12 was accosted on his way home from school. His mother has been burgled, her whole house burgled twice over, a smash and grab in her vehicle twice over. So even in one family, you might have many of these examples these are all city examples that I can relate from within my own immediate family.
So is it true that the government in South Africa is predominantly black? Is it all black government or is it mostly black?
It's overwhelmingly black, let's say perhaps to the extent of 85%. And then the other three major ethnic groups are represented. You have white people. You have Indian people from India who came here about 150 years ago. And then you have the mixed race people who insist upon being called coloreds. So they are sort of junior partners within the government, but it's about 85 to 90% black.
Does the cop or do the police come out to the farmlands and protect the whites, or they just let these things happen to the whites?
Well, there's a bit of a yes and a no there. The police are unable to withstand the wave of crime. They don't have the capacity. And so in any case, they would be struggling. But it has also been demonstrated. Now, recently, I believe the middle of last week, a report came out in which the South African police were demonstrated to be by far the most corrupt entity in South Africa. And that was a report that was done of a survey of much of Africa. It was a continent-wide assessment of social conditions and corruption, and, you know, these sorts of things that the United Nations and other people do. But particularly in South Africa, the police, the most corrupt people in South Africa. So on the one hand, it's sheer corruption, disinterest. They couldn't care less. On the other hand, they are few, and the crime is much.
Are the policemen mostly black in South Africa?
Yes, I would say that the police are probably 80% black. In certain regions where other groups are predominant, such as the mixed race people who have been mixed race for centuries and they call themselves coloreds, they insist on calling themselves coloreds. It's something that they're adamant about. There's a stronger colored presence. In the province that I come from, there are many Indian people. There's a stronger Indian presence, but overall, yes, Mr. Peterson, the police are going on for 80 to 85% black, yes.
Are you, so is it fair to believe that white farmers are not protected by the police departments in South Africa? You don't have any protection when it comes to law enforcement?
Very little. Very, very little, if anything at all. That is fair. That is a fair statement.
Are the whites in South Africa surprised that once the apartheid ended and the blacks took over, are they surprised that the blacks would treat them in such an evil way?
There's a yes and a no here. Many white people were so persuaded by the mood of optimism, the sort of Nelson Mandela effect, to put it into, you know, a phrase, so persuaded by the Northern Hemisphere propaganda. You know, it was the United States and Canada and Western Europe that kind of rammed down the throats of white people in South Africa that you're going to be in a harmonious society, everything will be good, just be more reasonable. On the other hand, there were those whites who were never surprised because they believe that you cannot get any good out of a communist government.
Right.
It is inevitable that these things will occur. So there's a yes and a no. Some people very much taken by surprise. Other people expected it all along.
It was known that Nelson Mandela was a socialist or communist, even though he pretended to be for freedom. Did whites in South Africa fall for that lie?
Yes, they did, Mr. Peterson. What occurred was that he kind of distanced himself from the Communist Party, although the African National Congress and the Communist Party were in an alliance, and the alliance remains today. During the elections, the one party may take members from the other party and put them on the election list. So it is an absolute hand-in-glove alliance. But he distanced himself a little bit, and he would go to Easter and stand on the steps of the cathedral and talk about Jesus Christ. And, you know, there would be these debates in the newspapers, and people would say, he's no communist. He's a Christian just like me, and, you know, he's a saint. But when he passed away in December of 2013, within a few weeks, some of his most intimate associates revealed that he'd remained clandestinely one of the members of the Central Committee of the Communist Party up to the day of his death.
Amazing. Why white people seem to be, not all, but around the world, white people seem to be very gullible. You know, I don't know, is that they want to have peace, they want to believe the lies. But I notice here in America, white people are the most hated species on earth. And yet they are joining forces with the people who hate them and go after other white people, calling them racist and all that. What's wrong with white people?
Yes. You know, Mr. Peterson, what has occurred in Western society over the past 100 years is that intellectualism has been substituted for intelligence. So if you go to university and you study particularly an arts degree, a liberal arts degree, they don't want to know your thoughts. They want you to regurgitate what you've said to them. So if you want to get anywhere within the system, you have to speak within what's known as the Overton window, the window of permissible thought, speech, and action of the modern society. And so it is that white people worldwide today are dominated by intellectuals who are only capable of regurgitating. They only have that capacity to intellectualize, not to think with wisdom. They're only capable of regurgitating what they've been told. And so we are one of the few societies in the world, I'm speaking now generally about white Western societies, that have fallen prey to this kind of postmodernism, humanism, moral relativism, this kind of complex that came out of the thought of Hegel and others 170 years ago. We're probably or almost the only race in the world that is specifically required not to be first and foremost intelligent, but required to be first and foremost intellectual. To be able to regurgitate like a cow chewing food through four different stomachs, up and down again, over and over again, this stuff that is fed to us. Whereas you find even in South Africa, and I say this, I have a kind of a close association over many years of living with black people at a time when it was unheard of. And so I'm a little bit more familiar with black African culture than most of the whites around me. And I tell them often, do not underestimate the wisdom of the people, the black people in South Africa. They are not hidebound by all of these crazy ideas that you have to buy into to, you know, if you go to university as a white person anywhere in the world, if you live in white society. These are people who understand wisdom. They understand up from down. They know the difference between backwards and forwards. They can see with their own eyes the difference between left and right. And unfortunately, people kind of fall into the trap of believing that because their mother's university professor said something, that it must be true. And so we believe all of this nonsense.
Are there blacks in South Africa who are standing with whites and against the other blacks who are trying to kill them? Are there black people in South Africa?
Yes, it's very politically incorrect, as you can imagine, but there certainly are. I met a black man a couple of months ago who said to me very clearly, I will never say this in public in my life, so don't quote me because I will deny it. But when the trouble comes, I'm standing with you. A friend of mine works very closely. The nature of his work is that he works very, very closely with the people around him, you know, for long periods of time, shoulder to shoulder. And six of his colleagues said to him, look, we're going to be loyal to you. And they've refused to leave the kind of bastion that he has built to defend his family. And they said, we're not leaving here. We ain't going out there. We're going to stand and die next to you and next to your wife. So there is that phenomenon. There's a famous politician called Tera Lekota who has been strident in recent months, even years, against the government, against the process of expropriation without compensation, against the farm murders and so on. So there is that phenomenon. Yes, sir, there is.
I don't know. How is this going to all turn out? How is it going to end?
We would say that it's an intractable thing, or it's an insoluble thing, that it can't be fixed. Not in the spirit of pessimism. Look, it's important that people realize that Saitlanders, we're not flawless, we're not perfect, but we are Christian, conservative, family men. By and large, that's our profile. We work hard and we pay taxes. We're not the sort of people, we are not the sort of demographic profile that has an interest in a civil war. But the way we look at it, when we analyze matters, when we look at it like a ball flying through the air, like two young boys, 14 years old, tossing a ball to one another, and the ball slips out of the one boy's hand, and he knows within 6 inches, oh dear me, it's going off to smash Mrs. Jones's window, you know. The trajectory of South Africa is clear. As long as it continues like this, and as long as there is no sign that it is slowing down, in fact, that it is speeding up, there's certainly no sign that it's stopping and no sign that it's reversing, then it is bound to end in a crisis. It can't not end in a crisis.
Is it possible that white people can kind of put a border between the blacks in South Africa and put your military there so the blacks can't cross over and just have a white South Africa and a black South Africa? Is that possible?
It has been called for many times by certain whites. They've said, look, we'll take the desert regions in the far west of South Africa where there's nothing. I mean, nothing. And we'll ensure that we'll take those desert regions that don't even have minerals underground. We will occupy areas that don't even have water. We're not asking for any favors. You know, we're willing to be practical exiles, but the government won't hear of it. So our national emergency plan, in the event that, I beg your pardon, that civil war does break out in the next two years or so, our plan, Saitlander's plan, is to draw all of our members and like-minded white people who are under threat in such circumstances to a remote region of South Africa and to do exactly what you're proposing.
What do the blacks want from the whites in South Africa? Because I'm not understanding what they want. They're not going to get, I mean, being violent and killing and robbing and raping is not a normal want. You know what I'm saying? What is it that they want from the white people?
You know, Mr. Peterson, the problem is that the politicians have exploited the black people of South Africa in such a shameless way that in the end, it's not about the people. It's only about the politicians. The politicians have spun stories, webs of lies, layers of lies for so long that the blacks, whether they believe the politicians or not, they now kind of have both feet in that boat. You know, there's they don't have, the black people of South Africa have no other option but to believe. They've bought in lock, stock, and two smoking barrels into the bulldust that the politicians fed them for the past 40 years. And I say 40 years for at least 15 years prior to the end of apartheid. You will have houses, you will have the best schools, you'll all have jobs, this, that, the next thing. And they've given them very, very little.
Yeah.
Black people are frustrated, and there's a phrase called helpless, hopeless, and lost. They're helpless. They're not equipped to help themselves. They have no hope, and they're wandering around lost. So if a politician comes along and says, well, the whites are the cause of all the trouble, look, the whites are rich and you are poor, that's because whitey has stolen from you, well, we should do something about it. People, whether they believe him or not, they're going to buy into what he's saying, because they have nowhere else to buy into. And they don't have, metaphorically speaking, any money, any means, any anything with which to buy into anything else. They can only take their own bodies and their own sweat and kind of obey this rhetoric. You know, we've had politicians calling openly for the slaughter of all whites. We've had one of our ministers, our Minister of Defense, who is a woman, saying that there will be a genocide of whites. That was on Thursday, the 2nd of November, if I'm not mistaken, 2017, Thursday, the 2nd of November, recorded. She said there will be a civil war and a genocide of all whites. So these black people who are just seeing all hope slip away from them.
When I was growing up in America, I grew up on a plantation in America. I was born there. And I was raised under the Jim Crow law. We didn't have blacks this way, acting this way. Blacks were very independent. They loved all people. They understood good and evil, that you have good in some people, even some people of all races. They didn't blame white people. They didn't have so-called physical leaders. They fought for themselves. They were guided by God. And then the civil rights movement started here in America, and all of that ended. Blacks, most blacks, not all, but most turned away from God, and they started believing in people, having black leaders and others to lead them. And I noticed that around the world, blacks are real subject to violence. They're real easily manipulated, deceived. They have no shame about begging and being violent and blaming.
Yes.
Will they ever overcome that? How can blacks become normal human beings again?
Well, one of the themes that crops up a lot in our organization, and it's driven by our leader and founder, Mr. Gustav Müller, he reiterates it to us all the time, is that the first enemy of white people in South Africa is not black people. It's the white people who convinced black people that they'd been hard done by. Now,
Yes. Nobody's
defending apartheid here, but it's the same as America. You have this stuff rammed down your throat, and that's not coming from within black people. You can't blame black people.
Well, we have some black
coming up spontaneously with that idea.
Well, we have some black leaders who are so-called leaders who are doing that. We have the so-called leaders of the civil rights movement. We have the black caucus and some of the black preachers. Those people who desire power and wealth, they are constantly feeding those lies to the other blacks.
Well, you know, somebody told me something very interesting when I was in the USA recently for a speech that I gave. He said to me, we were on this kind of a subject, and I was making this point. I was making this point that this is derived externally. There is somebody out there. You know, it sounds neurotic. It sounds hysterical. It sounds paranoid. But there is somebody out there who is stirring this pot of trouble. And I was making this point to this guy, and he turned to me and he said, did you know that the first seven presidents of the NAACP were not black.
Yeah.
And I said, that's exactly my point.
Oh, I see.
It takes somebody else to come in from outside and cause this trouble. And it's those troublemakers that our leader warns us about all the time. It's these globalists. It's these guys who have hidden agendas, who are seeking the destruction of Western society, who are like George Soros, paying billions of dollars to sponsor it and to sponsor the spontaneous injection of refugees into cultures under false pretext. We've seen it. We know it doesn't make sense. So definitely there is somebody out there with an agenda to set the races against each other. And first and foremost, that is the black and the white people. It only later it becomes the Arabs and the Chinese.
Muslims and all them. I never thought of it that way. I didn't realize that over the so-called civil rights black leaders, there is somebody over them that's manipulated them by way of money and other power, so-called power, and then they are manipulating the blacks.
Yes.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, a gentleman in another gentleman in the USA, a highly intelligent, very kind, gentle, fair-minded man, one of the finest people I've met in my life, told me about Martin Luther King's handlers and the things that they'd written about him and the kind of, you know, the things they were saying behind his back. Whether they were good or bad is besides my point. It's not the
right
point I'm making.
Right.
But they were holding conversations completely independent of him, and then kind of colluding to feed him one story. So it's, again, you know, it's controlled, it's manipulated, it comes from outside, and one day, God willing, there will be justice. And those people who have been the puppet masters of our societies for the past couple of hundred years, they will see justice.
Simon, I got to ask two quick questions. I'm out of time here with you, but if white people in South Africa, the farmers, decided, you know what, black folks, okay, y'all can have it. You can have all the land, all the farms. We're just going to pack up and leave. What would happen to South Africa if
there
the white
no
left?
There would be a crisis, because farming knowledge is not something that can be shared overnight. Engineering knowledge, etc. These people have knowledge and skills and experience. And if you just pulled the plug, you would have another Zimbabwe, another Central African Republic, another Nigeria, another Kenya. It doesn't work any other way. This is real life in the real world.
I just thought of something there real fast. In America, not all, but most white men are afraid to speak up about black people here and what they're doing. And so as a result, they leave their wife, their children subject to all this hateful stuff by sending them to black schools or public schools and things like that. I noticed that white men are afraid of women. They're afraid of the blacks.
Yes.
They're afraid of the Muslims. They're afraid of everybody. Are the white men in South Africa the same way?
Not to the same extent. I've spent a lot of time in the USA, and I can say we have also been emasculated and effeminized through guilt and shame, the same propaganda and brainwashing that the white men of the USA have been exposed to through the processes of, loosely speaking, the past 150 years. You're guilty of this, you're wrong for that, you're bad for the other, you're white and you're male and you're middle class and so on. Yes, we've been exposed to it, but thank God we haven't been emasculated and effeminized, not even 50% that you see in the USA.
When South Africa first came about, when they first heard of South Africa, who were the first people in South Africa? Was it black, whites, Indian, Mexican, Japanese? Who were the first people in South Africa?
They were the scientific term is the Aboriginal people, and the Aboriginal, in other words, the first of the first people in South Africa were the what were formerly known as Bushmen and Hottentots. Now, the more correct term, although it's actually a a very derogatory term, but science and political correctness have adopted this terrible term, are the San and the Khoi. The San and the Khoi peoples, we're in South Africa. Evidence suggests a minimum of 100,000 years, a minimum of 100,000 years before the first black people came from Nigeria across to the east of Africa and then down the east coast from approximately Kenya towards South Africa. And that's scientific, and there's no disputing it. The San and the Khoi people, very gentle people, very sincere, earnest people. I have two San and Khoi workers. They're lovely people, sweet, sweet people.
Do you know who Chief Buthelezi is?
Yes, Mangosuthu.
He's still the head of the Zulu tribe?
Well, the king is the head of the Zulu tribe, and it's taken very seriously. That province that they're in, the province that I come from, the Zulu people own and have always owned. There's never been a time that they were dispossessed of it. 32% of that province. And then any private ownership is something else, but the Zulu people own that. The king is the head. But his first minister, as was his father and as was his grandfather to the other kings, is Mangosuthu Buthelezi. So he's effectively like the prime minister of the Zulu people.
He's a Christian, right?
Yes.
And Nelson Mandela and his group didn't like Chief Buthelezi because Chief Buthelezi is a Christian and he's a fair man. Is that true?
Yeah, well, I would say so. You know, it's very popularly believed amongst white people that Chief Gacha Mangosuthu Buthelezi is a wise man, a considered man, that he has a lot of prudence, that he was gifted with intelligence. He's not a blowhard. He's not a firebrand. He says deep, thoughtful things, and that was much of the cause of the black on black violence before the end of apartheid, when the Zulu people and the other tribes, particularly Nelson Mandela's tribe, fought to the death for a long, long time.
Yeah.
They found it very difficult to reconcile the two outlooks.
And both those are black tribes. I had the honor of my friend Dennis Prager here in the United States, L.A., invited Chief Buthelezi to speak. And so Dennis invited me to have dinner and meet Chief Buthelezi. So I was fortunate enough to really get to know him, talk to him. And it's an experience that has always been with me. And that's been a couple of years now. But I just think he's one of the most noble men I've ever met. I really like him a lot.
Yes, yes. I don't know him personally, but I do know somebody who dealt with him for many years. And apparently he's a superb man,
yeah.
Very decent, very respectable, very gentlemanly. And his wife has just passed away the month before last, I believe.
Amazing.
And apparently she was also a bit of an angel.
Yeah, he's from what I know of him, he's definitely a good man. Well, tell your friend to tell Chief Buthelezi Jesse Peterson say hi.
I will do so.
Simon, how can people reach you? How can they get your blog or your show, whatever you're doing on that side of the world?
Well, Mr. Peterson, the key thing for us is funding. We are coming out into the world as beggars, and it shames us. But the funds that we receive from the USA have enabled us to implement a national emergency plan for civil war that is now being replicated in 5 places in the USA and about 7 places in Europe. We have a brilliant national emergency plan. We ask people to please continue to help us by funding it. The best way to do so is through PayPal. We have a PayPal link in the bottom right-hand corner of our homepage. It is suidlanders.org, S-U-I-D, Landers, suidlanders.org. In the bottom right-hand corner is a PayPal link, and any and all donations received are received in appreciation and in gratitude.
SUIDLANDERS.org. I want to ask one final question, then I got to run. Why is it that America and other countries are not reaching out to white South Africans and opening up their doors and helping them to either get out of there or going over to South Africa and protecting them from the blacks who are attacking them? Why is that the whites are not getting the help?
Because it's not part of the globalist agenda, Mr. Peterson. You know, I watched a report in the USA the other day. Somebody funded Congolese people to fly from the Congo to Ecuador and then to go up to the USA to become these all of a sudden refugees. They were sponsored. They were approached in the Congo. It's somehow within this globalist agenda, they have a desperate need to dilute these societies. And the last thing that they want is a bunch of Christian conservative white boys coming into the USA. That's just the way it is. And I'm sure that you see it. You know, I've listened to enough of your material to understand that you understand what I'm talking
about. Yeah, I do, clearly. So the whole thing is about socialism and communism. They are trying to take over the United States as well as South Africa, right? It's about that.
Yes. Amazing. It's about that. It's about this globalist agenda to destroy the Christ, to destroy conservatism, to destroy strength, to create a miscegenation of people where everybody is ultimately answerable to them rather than to some other authority. That certainly seems to be the trend.
So am I crazy when I say that my concern in America that white people will become minority and people of color will become majority, and if they take over our government, we're going to have the same situation in America that you guys are dealing with in South Africa? Am I wrong in thinking that?
With all due respect, Mr. Peterson, the best way I can answer you is to say, why wouldn't it? How could you be wrong?
Yeah.
What evidence is there that it won't happen like that? Every shred of evidence to a rational person, rather to an intellectual who just believes the rubbish that CNN and CNBC feeds him, to anybody who's got a mind to think by themselves, to examine the evidence, to examine the past, to examine why would it not happen the way you've just described?
Amazing. Amazing. Simon, absolutely appreciate you coming on, man. Thank you so much. And I wish you well. I wish all of you well there. My prayers are with you. And it's horrible. It's not, and I'm telling black people and others, to do evil against other people is not going to turn out very well for them, because evil destroys the person who are pushing the evil, not the ones who are being attacked.
Yes. Yes. Well, thank you very much for that message. Thank you for being part of this global fight for decency and respectability and traditional values.
Simon Roche, thank you so much, man. Give out your website. It's SUIDLANDERS.org.
That's the one.
All right. Thank you so much. And if you ever come into the U.S. to speak again here at L.A., let me know. I would love to come to hear your speech and have you in the studio.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson.
All right.
Goodbye, and God bless you.
And God bless you, and thanks for coming on. Bye now.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Bye-bye. Amazing, folks. Absolutely amazing. And we are going to have the same situation in America, folks. Believe me. If I can see it coming, and I'm not the smartest black person on this side of the heaven, you should be able to see it coming, no matter what your color is. It's not a game. It's the real deal. It's the real deal.